right, well, good evening. It's good to see all of you. I will give you fair warning. I will need increased participation on average from all of you tonight. Miss Martin is not here. So the onus is on us to take up the slack. Genesis chapter 19 is where we find ourselves this evening. As you are turning over there, a couple of housekeeping things. Of course, tonight's questions were back on the back table. Next week's questions are there right beside them if you want to pick up a paper copy now. If you want to keep an electronic copy or find it online later, they're also available on our website under the Bible class materials page. I think it's under resources. If you look there, not only is next week's questions, but the one following is also there too. So if you get a chance, you want to read ahead a little bit, those are there for our benefit. The other thing I want to make sure I address tonight before we move on, the pace has been a lot slower than I'm used to. It hasn't been bad, but to prevent this from being a two-year study on Genesis, okay, I'm going to very consciously kind of move us a little more faster as we go along. Certainly we're not going to be done by the end of the month, but hopefully by the end of the third quarter is my goal right now. So that will take it a little bit faster as far as the pace goes. So you'll notice that hopefully in the weeks to come. Tonight, however, we're going to keep our schedule we had planned on and go through Genesis chapter 19. What's going on here? Genesis 19. All right, destruction. Big destruction, lots of it. Okay, this is not, of course, a happy occasion here. Lots of people die very painfully because of sin and God's judgment against it. So it's not a happy chapter, but it is one where there's a lot of action. The word was destruction. Who is being destroyed? Someone else. Sodom and the others, right? Sodom and Gomorrah. Admah and Zeboim are the other two. There's a fifth city that's supposed to get destroyed and doesn't. Zoar. Okay. Zoar is actually the word for small or little. Lot refers to it as a little city, and Zoar actually translates to little back in the Hebrew. Genesis 19, beginning of verse 1, two angels come to the gate of Sodom. Where is Lot at this period of time? All right. Does that just mean his rocking chair's at the front door or what? What's it mean? He's one of the people in charge. Okay, he is one of the people who is making decisions. A little further along in Genesis, Abraham is going to meet with the Hittites. And certain of the men who were in charge of the Hittite nation were gathered. And he actually negotiates with one of them for a burial plot. But if we see this mentioned about Lot, we know he's one of the important people. They even make the reference in verse 9, this man has become the judge, kind of a derogatory kind of, this man's been among us and now he's trying to tell us, you know, what for on this matter of the two men that have come to visit. How does Lot's behavior mimic Abraham's in chapter 18? Okay, so when the two men approach, Lot's reaction to them is the same in that way. What else? Someone else. Okay, so you sort of, that's what they have in common. They're both being kind of invited to something else, right? Abraham invites them to stay, and Lot invites them to come in out of the town square, you might say. Okay, what else? There are other similarities. Prepare a meal. Okay, for in both cases, excellent. So similar, maybe water is mentioned in both. Similar hospitality. I think the point's pretty clear. Lot behaved the same way Abraham did. Okay, Lot behaved the same way Abraham did. A little further along, when Abraham's servant is sent to go find a wife for Isaac, when he arrives and he meets Rebekah and Laban, Laban's going to do the same thing. Okay, Laban's going to invite him in, make a meal, that kind of thing. It's hospitality, and we're going to see it a couple of other times. There are some contrasts, though, between Lot and Abraham. One of them is kind of a, it's not really a consequential thing, but it does serve to sort of set the scene. Abraham meets the men in the heat of the day. When does Lot meet them? Evening, okay? Now you might say, well, that's just the time of day, okay? And maybe that's true, but there are some others. Abraham's guests are relatively safe, you might say. What about Lot's guests? Extreme danger. Okay, the reason why Lot was so persistent to have them come in. Another difference is how they react. How do Abraham's guests react to being invited? You remember? Yeah, they just sort of went, right? It didn't say they argued about one way or the other, but how did the angels respond? Lot tells them to come in. What do they say? Nah, we're going to stay out here. Okay, Lot has to kind of press. So already, while there are some similarities, there are some hints that something's very different here. Okay, there are some similarities, but there are some big key contrasts between these two events. One thing you notice, and before we go into the specifics, there are some references in chapter 19 to time moving forward. Okay, you see these within the life of Jesus. John references that, you know, we're in a week before the Passover, and then the day before the Passover, and then the evening. You get some time markers. In verse 1, when do the men arrive? In the evening, okay? We have the things that happen, and the reason why we know the story, because all these things kind of happen at night. Verse 15, we have another time marker. As morning dawned, okay, the ESV puts it, or say in the morning time. Verse 23, another time marker. Said the sun had risen on the earth. So we're kind of moving along, right? And then finally, in verse 27, when Abraham goes to see, it says he arose early in the morning. Not only is this a story about judgment, but it's a story of judgment paired with time moving forward. And we're getting closer and closer and closer and closer to that moment. Even as you study through the chapter, judgment's coming, and it's coming, some might say, when the day dawns. A couple of other ways Lot and Abraham differ here. When the men come to visit Abraham, Sarah's involved, right? So Abraham comes to Sarah, says, make, you know, an overwhelming amount of food. Where's Lot's wife? No mention. Okay, good, bad, or otherwise. During the visit of the men to Abraham, Abraham is re-promised a son. But when the angels come to visit Lot, he offers up his daughters to the men outside. Okay, Lot's in a really bad place, and those contrasts go from there. We've already kind of outlined the beginning of the story. The two angels come. Lot convinces him to come in out of the town square, assuming he knows what's going to happen. After making them the meal, which you notice also isn't as good as the one Abraham made. Abraham made them what?
Young calf,
milk, curds, overwhelming amount of bread. Okay, it just says Lot made unleavened bread, kind of a hasty thrown together thing. What do the men of the city do? It's hard to find a piece of scripture that's more disturbing than this one, in my opinion. What happens here? Right before the men lay down. Okay, so that's their request, which is terrible. Who is it that makes the request? This is the chilling part. All right. Did you notice that the chapter makes a point to say it's everybody? It's not just the town gang, okay, or the local misfits here. It makes the point to say everyone. The men of the city, okay, so that's already an inclusive term. The men of Sodom, so all of them, both young and old. And what's the last one? That's terrifying. The ESV says all the people down to the last man. Okay, this wasn't the wicked majority or minority in Sodom. This is all of them show up. Might say the only Sodomite that didn't come to Lot's house was Lot. And they come and they make an awful, awful, awful request. Where are the men who came to you? Bring them out to us that we may know them. I don't want to get into the details of that. You know full well what's fixing to happen. Atrocity is getting ready to be committed. The totality of the wickedness is just stunning here. It might be matched with just how appalling what Lot says is. I'll see your sin and let's trade for another. Right? Lot's objection kind of takes three forms. First he says what? My brothers... Don't act wicked, or don't act so wickedly. Don't do quite that much. Isn't it disturbing to you that Lot refers to these men, my brothers? The town literally is getting ready to rape your guests. My brothers, don't do. That's terrible. What's the second thing he says? I have two daughters who have not known any man. Lot says you can take advantage of my daughters instead of these guests. Take them instead. One author put it this way. For a moment, it is Sodom that has taken up residence in the soul of Lot rather than the other way around. He is there and it has come inside him. For the third thing, only do nothing to these men, for they've come under the shelter of my roof. Go ahead and abuse my family members. Just don't harm these men because my hospitality has been extended to them. Okay, to say this is a messed up situation is an understatement. Okay. Things are very, very wrong here. The Sodomites are undeterred. What do they say? Yeah. Get out of the way. You came to live here, now you're the judge. We're going to do worse to you than we're going to do to them. Okay, and you can take that for however bad you want it to be, and you'll probably be right. So much so, they're getting ready to break the door down with Lot on the other side of it. Okay, things have gone from worse to double worse, you might say. Bad to worse. The two angels mercifully rescue Lot from the Sodomites. They snatch him inside the door, strike all the rest of them with blindness. And then in verse 12, the angels begin to warn Lot. Do you remember what the Lord said he was going to do in 18 and 21 with the city of Sodom? He was going down there to do what? Well, not in 18 and verse 21. I'm going to go down there. I'm going to see if this is what has come up to me. What's our answer so far? Yes. That's awful. That the outcry has become so great, and in the first 11 verses of the chapter, it's confirmed. It's confirmed and confirmed again. Okay? This is stage 4 wickedness. Okay? This is about as bad as it gets. The angels warn Lot, and Lot goes to warn his family. They're warned in verse 13, we're about to destroy this place because the outcry against his people has become great before the Lord. See, that word outcry is the same one used back in chapter 18. Let me see if the outcry is as great as it is, so when they come and they see it, they say, the outcry is great. Okay. Things are bad and we're going to destroy the city. Lot goes up, goes to his sons-in-law. What does he say to them? Yeah, you better go. But what happened? I thought he was telling a joke. Why wouldn't they take him seriously? You ever thought about that? I mean, this isn't just something you took. Go ahead. I'm sorry. He's one of them. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Well, and there's just, you know, this tenet. What do you mean, destroy? It's silly. No, it's not going to happen. I want to make a real 2019 application. What does hypocrisy do to your message? It dilutes it, defeats it, and destroys it. You cannot possibly hope to preach the coming judgment, salvation, these sorts of things, if it's not already a life that you're living yourself. Right? If you're living the life of someone within Sodom, someone who's in the gate, someone who is among them and with them and sees no problem up until now staying there. A man who is willing to give his daughters over. Okay, do you think the men of the city became this way the evening the angels came in? Let's work this out. They didn't get this way when the angels showed up. So the men of the city were this way beforehand. And Lot still is going to give his daughters to them. You ever think about that? Yeah, I think that would be clear from the chapter. It makes the point. It's all of them. Lot's getting ready to give his daughters over to men like this. Okay, things have gone from bad to worse here. And like I said, Sodom has taken up residence inside of Lot. Sodom seems to have also found its way inside Lot's wife and Lot's daughters also. Lot's wife doesn't escape the judgment. And Lot's daughters take the sin with them. Yes, sir? Oh, certainly not. Yeah. They thought he was joking. Right? Or can't imagine. Yeah, things are not good here, okay? Especially in Lot and in Lot's family. They're not heated. They're treated as a big joke. There's another similarity between the story in chapter 18 and the one in chapter 19. In chapter 18 and verse 9, the angels ask Abraham, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And then she's in the tent, and then the answer is good, right? It's good news. She's going to have a son. In this chapter, 19 and verse 12, "Have you anyone else here? Do you have anybody else?" And the news is bad instead of good. We're going to destroy the city. Look in verse 15. As morning dawned. So let's get our time right. When did the angels show up? Evening. Okay, so whatever number you want to put on that. I don't think it's specific. Let's say it takes them 2 hours to eat, maybe. I don't know. It takes us 10 minutes at home. Because they just, you know, throw it at their face. This thing happens with the men of the city, because it says that they came before the men went to lay down. And then all this period of time in the middle, they're trying to get Lot to leave. Please go. Hurry up. Go. Leave the city. We're going to destroy it. At some point he has to go out and find his sons-in-law and come back. What does it say in verse 16 Lot did? He hesitated or he lingered. Why would he linger? Yeah. You would linger too if you got asked to leave your home. You got asked to leave a place you care about. Or at least you're used to. Sure has. Absolutely. How should we regard God's warnings that He'll destroy the wicked and save the righteous? This is good for us today. It's good for Israel. It's good for us. How should you respond? Yeah. Whatever you say, and how should you do it? Yeah, hurry up. Verse 17, I think, is a great demonstration for what it ought to be when God says, "This is judgment is coming. You need to be saved." Okay. Run or escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills lest you be swept away. Too many people don't view judgment in terms of in this type of time frame. Oh, judgment's just a thing I got to worry about later. You know, no, it is a right now issue. It is escape for your life. It is, you might not make it home tonight. It's that kind of issue. We don't need to be afraid to talk about it in those terms. Sounds cliche. Well, you may not make it home. It's the truth. When it comes to judgment, how we talk about it. Lot lingers again. Did you notice that? And he finds time to make a counterproposal. This is staggering to me. They're urging Lot, saying, please go. And Lot's like, no, wait. I got a better offer. You've shown me great kindness in saving my life. Understatement number two in the chapter, okay? But I cannot escape to the hills lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. This is kind of the way Lot is, right? Lot says, well, I know what you're saying, but let me make you a better offer. He did it earlier in the chapter, didn't he? He negotiated with the sinners outside. Don't take the men, take my daughters. But the angels are merciful, and God is merciful to him. Verse 21, I grant you this favor also, but I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. That also is a similarity between chapter 18 and chapter 19. Towards the end of chapter 18, Abraham negotiates with God and requests for something, and God permits it out of his own mercy. And the same thing here happens to Lot. Zoar is spared, and Lot along with it. Verse 23 is when things get carried out exactly the way God wanted them to. This is a horrifying thing to imagine. And I find it interesting that several movies, the names of which kind of escape, they've tried to give us pictures of what this might have looked like. I think Pompeii might be the closest thing we can think of. Vesuvius erupted and Pompeii was destroyed. That might be the closest thing to this. It's horrifying to try to think about this kind of destruction. But we've seen this before in Genesis. Where? We've seen something this awful already. Yeah. We've seen this poured out already on mankind once before with the flood, and it's just as awful now as it was then. Verse 26. But Lot's wife behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Jesus references that event in Luke 17 and verse 32 very simply when he says, remember Lot's wife. Why remember Lot's wife? What's the point of that phrase? She didn't have faith in what she was promised, okay? And maybe not enough faith to go forward, but what else? Yeah. God will bring the past. When he says, I'm going to destroy it, turn around and don't run and don't look back. Don't look back. Okay? I will carry out exactly the way this is going to be. Okay. And when Jesus tells us this in Luke 17:32, he's referencing when judgment's coming. Okay. And he keeps making reference to on that day, right? On the day, verse 29, when Lot went out from Sodom. Okay. Don't turn back. Don't look around. I mean, what was she hoping to see? I don't know. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. Okay, her reason doesn't matter at all. And I think that's helpful for us too. God says, run away from it and don't look back. There is no conceivable good reason to do so. To look back. We don't know why, and it doesn't matter because she was destroyed. It's kind of the same thing with how we deal with the Lord. No matter what good reason we come up with for not carrying out God's will or for disobeying Him in some regard. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the reason was. You're destroyed. Okay? Because you didn't carry out His will. Abraham gets up early in the morning, verse 27, to go look, and what does he see? He sees the smoke. What does it resemble? Smoke of a furnace. Okay. I made this point before, but earlier in Genesis we made mention of the valley where these cities were. The valley of Siddim was full of bitumen pits, and I've made reference a couple of times already to what that was. Literally, the whole valley caught fire, and it burned. The closest thing I can think to is an oil fire, if you've ever seen one of those. Okay. Just black smoke going up. Abraham looks down, and it's going up like a furnace. Verse 29, so it was that, Genesis 19:29, so it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. I almost wonder in verse 29 if that is an echo of Christ for us today. You could say that God remembered what Christ did, and as a result, He sent us out. You know, He sent us out from the destruction because He remembered what Christ did. Maybe a thought for you to think about. There are lots of parallels with this story and the flood account. Okay, I want you to think about a few of those. What are some of those parallels? Some things they have in common. Yes, overwhelming sin, okay, exceedingly wicked, okay, in Genesis 6:5, all the thoughts of their hearts were only evil continually, I think the ESV puts it. And we have a similar reference here in 19 with all the men, 19:4 and 5 with all the men of the city. What else? Goes and then in the face of how sinful they are, he still tells Lot, go out. Do you have any sons? Do you have any daughters? Do you know anybody? Go out and tell them. You know, he makes it. I won't say they weren't able to be redeemed, but they would not accept it.
Well,
right, right. They wouldn't respond. I heard a preacher put it this way. He said, the wonder is that it doesn't happen more often. That's the incredible part. Why doesn't this happen every decade? Destroyed the place.
I think people are kind of missing the point that we're talking about here, is to accept
and they are instructive to those that come later. You know, that this is what will happen if you don't turn back. And the flood, I mean, Sodom and Gomorrah and the flood are always, seem to be always referenced together, right? In Luke 17, Jesus, when talking about final judgment, mentions the flood and Sodom and Gomorrah, right? Those are his two proofs. Peter does the same thing in 2 Peter 2. And in the same order, interestingly enough, like the flood, like Sodom and Gomorrah. So they're instructive for the future. I think both stories highlight God's mercy. Okay, Noah finds favor in the eyes of the Lord in the midst of this evil and crooked world that he was in. Lot finds mercy from the Lord also. In both cases, the door is shut by God, which I find interesting. God shuts the door of the ark, and then he shuts the door of Lot's house to keep the sinners out. In both cases, the family is shown mercy if they will follow the Father, if they will heed the Father's instructions. In both cases, the family was shown mercy also. In both cases, God's judgment is rained down from heaven. In the flood, it came up also from below, but you can't miss the reference to both cases. In both instances, God remembers the righteous. Okay, there's a ton of these. A couple things I want to finish up with, or at least attempt to finish up with. I only have 8 more pages here. All right. Lot was by no means perfect. But neither was Abraham. Okay, Abraham wasn't so overwhelmingly righteous that he deserved what he got in chapter 18. And Lot has some good qualities to him. Okay, Lot is still described in 2 Peter 2 and verse 7 as righteous. It says specifically, righteous Lot. Right. Neither man was perfect. Both of them, in these two stories, demonstrate righteousness in their behavior towards the Lord and His messengers. It's not perfect. In Lot's case, it has a lot of problems. But at the end of the day, he was hospitable to God's visitors, and he obeyed their instructions. At the end of the day, their righteousness is what's rewarded, not their flawlessness. One author put it that way, and I really liked it. And yet, in both cases, unbelief still persisted among them. Sarah didst believe the message of the angels in 19 and 21. Lot clearly has trouble believing. 19 and verse 30, Lot's daughters don't believe that certain things had happened there. Okay, last few verses of the chapter. What happens? Summarize briefly, if you would. Incest. Okay, and that carries with it everything that it should. Okay. One other thing that is similar to this account and every other time all of mankind has been judged is that sin survives through the survivors. Adam and Eve are thrown out of the garden, and yet sin lives on because of Cain. Cain commits wickedness against Abel. Noah and his entire family are destroyed. I'm sorry, Noah and everybody but his family. Everybody but Noah and his family. There we go. I get it right. Who's on the vote? All right. Everyone's destroyed except the people in the ark, and yet sin survives. Noah gets drunk, is naked, and then Ham sins against Ham. That same thing happens here. Lot and his daughters escape Sodom and Gomorrah's destruction, but sin survives through them. Someone's left alive, the sin survives. So the only option is to kill even the survivor. Now follow me on this. What are you and I told we have to do in Christ? We have to die in Christ and be raised to walk in the newness of life. That's the ultimate solution to sin. That's the only way sin doesn't continue. That's the only solution to it. It's something to think about as you go forward. All right, last couple minutes. Let's make sure I got my questions handled here. This would be the back of our question sheet. I always do this, and I always regret doing it. We've looked at connections between Lot's behavior and Abraham's. We've looked at Lot's three-part plea with the Sodomites. Okay, we looked at those and kind of how him being in Sodom reflected on each one of those. Number 14, what effect does living in Sodom have on our ability to warn against God's judgment? It kills it. It's hypocrisy. They're not going to listen to us if we're living and doing like they do. Okay, if our life's not any different from the world, how are we going to convince people to change to it? Okay, it's like changing channels and the same thing is on. Okay, we've got to have something different going on. How does the account of Sodom's destruction highlight God's mercy as well as His justice? Yeah, Lot and his daughters live. Lot's wife lives to some extent, right? For a little while at least, until she turns around and is destroyed. And was willing to spare more. And if he had 10, he would have left the whole city. See, it's mercy's still in there. Okay, but mercy doesn't override justice. Okay, and we got to know both. With God is not an either or, love, judgment, you know, mercy. He's both. And we got to recognize both parts. We've looked at parallels between this and the flood account. What would Israel need to learn from something like this? They can learn a lot of things, but what are some of the things they would need to know? Yep. Over and over, if you read through Exodus, especially, Israel messes up, God says, I'm going to destroy all of them. And then Moses steps in. It happens 4 times, I think. I'm going to destroy all of them, Moses steps in. In one case, God says, I'm going to consume all of them, and starts to do so. And then Aaron runs out with the censer and actually stops the plague. I was reading that today. If you're going to be spared from God's judgment, you have to obey what He says, whatever it is. Yes. If we start reading the Genesis story as who deserves to be saved, you know, that's not going to work. God saves the righteous. He doesn't save the perfect, because there aren't any. But there are those who, through their faith, and even with Lot having a lot of problems, okay, and a lot of things we like to, you know, point fingers at, he's still called righteous, you know, at the end of the book. And he does escape God's judgment, so we have to give him credit for that. It's like... It's like we get 2 or 3 windows into the life of Lot, and all of them are bad, right? And so what's our conclusion about all of Lot's life? He's awful, right? We get 2 things said in the New Testament about Thomas. One of them's bad, so we think doubting Thomas, right? Thomas is... Right. Yeah, he escapes judgment, but with, like you said, almost nothing. Okay, not even his wife makes it through. All right, very good. If you've got the questions for next week, I believe, my memory serves me right, it's 20 and 21, I think, is next week. Which should be manageable, I think. 20 goes fairly quickly, and so does 21. So be prepared to do that, and then we'll talk about Isaac hopefully the week following after that. Thank you for your great comments. I do appreciate our time together, always.